Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Exodus chapter 25. I'm going to cover in this audio verses 23 through 40, the bread of the presence and the lampstand. We are in the midst of the detailed instructions by God to Moses about Moses is on top of Mount Sinai during that 40 days and 40 nights. He's communing with the Shekinah glory of God, the glory cloud, and God is telling him how to build the tabernacle and its furniture. In the first part of chapter 25, in our last audio, first 22 verses, we looked at how the sanctuary was going to be financed by voluntary contributions, and then we looked at the construction of the Ark of the Covenant. So now here we are in Exodus 25, verses 23 through 29. I will start to read. You shall make a table of acacia wood, 2 cubits long and 1 cubit wide and 1.5 cubits high. You shall overlay it, that's the table, with pure gold and make a gold border, or as some translations have it, a molding around it, around the table. You shall make for the molding a rim of a handbreadth around it, and you shall make a gold border for the rim around it, around the molding. You shall make 4 gold rings for it and put rings on the 4 corners which are on its 4 feet. The ring shall be close to the rim as holders for the poles to carry the table. You shall make the poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold, so that with them the table may be carried. You shall make its dishes and its pans and its jars and its bowls with which to pour drink offerings. You shall make them of pure gold. Now, there's a lot of stuff in here. We'll unpack it. First of all, the cubits, the dimensions. Well, first of all, let's just talk about the table in general. This is the table that's going to hold the bread, the table of the bread of the presence. The tabernacle was a house for God to dwell in, and so God's house needs some furniture, and this is the first piece of furniture, the table. This is John Gill's idea. A table is where people have a meal together, so the table is a symbol of fellowship with God. There's bread of the presence on the table, so symbolically God is eating bread with his people. There's some other symbolism of the bread that we can draw out later, which I'll get to later. So this is the table. Now the dimensions, the Holman Christian Study Bible translates the Hebrew measurements into English units, so it's easier to picture, at least for me. Exodus 25:23 in the Holman Christian Study Bible, you are to construct a table of acacia wood, 36 inches long, that's 1 yard, 18 inches wide, that's 1.5 feet, and 27 inches high, that's 3 inches over 2 feet high. That's not very big. That's a small table. 1 yard long, 1.5 inches, 1.5 feet wide. Now, this border that's mentioned, the NASB has border. The Holman Christian Standard has molding. I'm just going to describe it, and let me say that sometimes people disagree over exactly how the verbal description should be interpreted, but I have a reasonable way to interpret it, and it also matches all the pictures on Bing Images that I looked up, so we're going to go with this. First of all, there's a rim or a molding around the table. Now, this rim was a handbreadth in width, and so what is that, 3 or 4 inches? And it wraps around the table, the top of the table, around each edge, length and width. So that takes care of verse 24, a gold border around the table. Now, if you will picture this molding running around the table, the top edge of said molding being at an even height with the surface of the table, so the table is flat as it hits the molding. But now you need something to keep the bread from falling off the table. So now there is a rim on the molding that runs around the table that sticks up a little bit above the surface of the table. And that rim is on top of the molding. So let's see if I can read this where it makes sense. Verse 24, you have a gold border or a molding around the table. You shall make for the table a rim of a handbreadth around it, or a molding of a handbreadth. So that's the molding that's 3 or 4 inches wide going around the table, but whose top part is even with the top, with the plain surface of the table. Next, in verse 25, you shall make a gold border for the molding around it, around the molding. And so that's the sticking up part that sticks up over the edge of the table and goes around, keeps the bread from falling off. Now we go to the rings that hold the poles so that the Levites could carry the table. Verse 26, you shall make four gold rings for it and put rings on the four corners which are on its 4 feet. Now, the NASB is confusing here. And by the way, King James, NASB, you're going to look at some real confusing translations when it gets to trying to interpret a verbal description. And so, really, Holman Christian Study Bible is a much better translation to use, in my opinion. But since I've got the NASB here, what do we have? Four gold rings on the four corners which were on its 4 feet. Well, what that means is you got the four legs, the 4 feet of the table, and then when you get to the top of the legs, you have the corner of the table, and then that's where the rings are, on the four corners, facing forward, two on each side so that the poles can go through. Let me read you the Holman Christian Study translation of verse 26. Make four gold rings for it, for the table, and attach the rings to the four corners at its four legs. How much simpler that is. Now, these poles that were to go through the four rings, mentioned in verse 27, the rings shall be close to the rim as holders for the poles to carry the table. Those poles did not stay permanently in the table, as John Gill and Jameson Fawcett and Brown point out. The poles of the ark did, most of the time, except when they were putting a cover over it. But not so with the tables. Those poles weren't in the holy place when the priest went in there to do their jobs of changing the bread out, changing the lampstands out, or snuffing the light, changing the wicks in the lampstand. If the poles that had been in the table there, that would have interfered with the work of the priest, as John Gill and Jameson Fawcett and Brown said. So the poles are for carrying the tabernacle through the wilderness. Now in verse 29, we see that God tells Moses to tell the people to make dishes and pans and jars and bowls. That's the New American Standard Bible translation of these implements. The NIV has plates and dishes, pitchers and bowls. The dishes and the bowls are the same in the two translations. I suppose that the NIV's pitchers is the NASB's jars, and the pans for the NASB is the NIV plates. Well, you can tell from that it's not clear what these instruments are, but we can make a rough estimate at it. Adam Clark said that the dishes and pans were for baking the bread, the jars were for holding incense, and the bowls were for pouring out drink offerings. And of course, these were not kept in the holy place. There would be enough room. They're kept outside somewhere where the priests could use them to carry into the holy place to do their job. The KJV has it even more complicated. They say the pans were spoons and the jars were covers. Well, that's even more obtuse. I shouldn't say obtuse. Opaque is even more opaque. It's hard to understand what they're talking about. So let's just assume in general that they had to pour blood out, that they had to store incense, they had to bake bread. All that stuff had to be done in these instruments for doing it. Some people say that the implements were stored around the rim extending from the top of the molding. In other words, around the edge of the table, right next to the rim on top of the molding so that the instruments wouldn't fall off. I really don't believe that. I think they kept all this stuff outside. I haven't seen any learned Jewish opinion on that yet, but I think that's the way it goes. The priest would then bring the implements inside the holy place as needed. We go now to Exodus 25:30. God continues speaking to Moses. You shall set the bread of the presence on the table before me at all times. Now, the bread of the presence has traditionally been translated showbread, as the NIV Study Bible points out. King James has it that way, except they say S-H-E-W, showbread. Bread of the presence, in my opinion, is a much better translation. Presence refers to the presence of God himself. So when they saw the bread there, that symbolizes God being there, the bread of God's presence. What do we know in the scriptures about God's presence? Exodus 33:14-15, and he said, that's Yahweh, my presence shall go with you, and I will give you rest. Then he, that's Moses, said to him, if your presence does not go with us, do not lead us up from here. Your presence. Isaiah 63:9, in all their affliction he was afflicted, and the angel of his presence saved them. In his love and his mercy he redeemed them. The angel of his presence. Adam Clark says presence is the face of God. The presence of God is the face of God. And so the bread being laid out on that table was placed before the face of God, before the presence of God. Now there were 12 loaves of bread, one for each tribe. Adam Clark says there was 2 rows of 6 each. I don't know how he knows that. I saw one picture. They were actually stacked up on top of each other. I don't think anybody really knows. Clark speculates that at the end of each row was a golden dish in which frankincense was burned. Burned at the end of the week when loaves were changed out. I suspect Clark got that from these Jewish descriptions of the Old Testament ritual. Of course, the Jews and the rabbis added a lot of stuff to the Old Testament as they dealt with how to handle all this. The bread was changed out every Sabbath day, as John Gill points out. Here's some suggestions as far as the symbolism of this bread. NIV Study Bible says that Israel consecrated to God the fruits of her labors. So the harvest was made into bread. The bread is put on the table and says, "Here you are, God. All that we have is yours." That's nice. Here's an idea that I had. God is the bread of life for the Israelites. Of course, fulfilled as a type of Jesus. Jesus is the bread of life. I like that one. I'll probably pick that up reading somewhere. I don't have a site for it. John Gill says that it shows that God physically provides bread for the Israelites. Kind of like manna. He provides the bread, physical bread, to keep them going physically. Some people say that the bread is communion between God and the Israelites because the priest ate the bread when they changed it out every week. And the priests represent the people. So the people are, in the form of their priest, are eating the bread as guests of God. I like what Adam Clark says. "It is more difficult to ascertain the use of these loaves, or what they represented, than almost any other emblem in the whole Jewish economy. Many have conjectured their meaning, and I feel no disposition to increase their number by any addition of my own." Well, I think Clark's being a little too modest here. I gave you some of these conjectures, and I think that probably some or all of them might apply. I'm usually very conservative about symbolism, but I think bread of life in the table, in the holy place, God is the bread of life for the Israelites. I think that's a pretty good symbol, if you ask me. We go now to Exodus 25, verses 31 through 33. We're finished with the table of the bread of the presence, and now we're going to talk about the golden lampstand. The seven-branched lampstand. And by the way, the table, where was it placed in the holy place? Well, if you go through the door of the holy place, and remember the tabernacle was oriented toward the east, so the door was facing the east. So you're going with your back to the east, you're going west into the holy place. To your right, to the north, is the table of the bread of the presence. To your left is the seven-branched, golden seven-branched candlestick. So we start with verses 31, 32, and 33. "Then you shall make a lampstand of pure gold. The lampstand and its base and its shaft are to be made of hammered work." No acacia wood, of course. That's impossible. They made it out of gold. And hammered means it was not poured into a mold, heated up and poured into a mold. It was just a sheet of gold that they would hammer it out. A goldsmith would hammer it out and make it look nice. "It's to be made of hammered work. Its cups, its bulbs, and its flowers shall be of one piece with it." And I'm going to explain. I got a picture here. I'm going to explain the cups, bulbs, and flowers in just a minute. "Six branches shall go out from its sides, three branches of the lampstand from its one side, and three branches of the lampstand from its other side. Three cups shall be shaped like almond blossoms in the one branch, a bulb and a flower, and three cups like almond blossoms in the other branch, a bulb and a flower. So for six branches going out from the lampstand." Now, you might not have been able to follow that. That, again, is the New American Standard Translation. But let me just give you a picture of it. First of all, you got a golden base and a stem that goes straight up. A stalk, if you will. A rod, a shaft that goes straight up. At the very top of that rod, there is an almond blossom, a cup that looks like an almond blossom. So if you just imagine this cup like it's a bud, if you will, a green almond bud. I don't know how else to describe it. It's like a cup. And then you got at the rim of that green, of that cup, you got something, you got the gold that looks like almond, a blossom coming out of the cup. So the whole thing, the cup and the flower petals at the top, resemble an almond bud, bud plus its flower. Okay, and that's at the top of the stem. Now, intersecting this stem are six branches, three on the left, three on the right. And so they are arranged below the top bulb going down, one, two, three. This looks like your typical Jewish menorah. You've seen those before. And on each one of these branches, you see almond buds. And that might be a conjecture. It doesn't actually say that in the text, but people assume that there's almond buds on the branches. Now, you got three branches on the left, three branches on the right. At the top of each one of these branches, you have another cup and a flower blossom coming out of it shaped like gold. So now you got seven, three on the left, three on the right, and one on that center stalk. Now, on these almond buds, you have lamps, and the lamp back then was a clay saucer, the top rim of which was pinched, and in the saucer they would pour put oil, and they would lay a wick between the pinched spout, and the wick would go into the middle of the oil, so the wick would soak up oil from the saucer, and it would burn. So those were placed on top of the almond blossoms. Now, Jameson Fawcett and Brown says that the figure represented on the Arch of Titus in Rome gives the best idea. I've been under that arch. It's a famous arch. Titus, when he burnt down Jerusalem in AD 70, he built that arch to celebrate his victory, and then he would grab all the instruments of the temple that he had stolen, and he drew pictures on the arch. So that's probably a pretty good picture. I've saw it. I don't remember it exactly what it looked like, and I don't know how clear it is. But at any rate, that's a rough idea of what this seven-branch candlestick looked like. Now, the seven lamps of this lampstand, the seven lights, is significant because seven is the number of divine perfection. If you study the book of Revelation for not very long, you'll see seven everywhere, or the book of Exodus, for that matter. 7 days, 7 weeks, seven yearly Sabbath, seven, 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 seven. Seven is the number of divine perfection. 7 days, 6 days he created the earth, and the seventh day he rested. Divine perfection. Everything's finished, everything's complete. And so that seven stands for perfect, and of course it's lights, so perfect light. And again, the symbolism, God is the light of Israel. Where does seven come from? Let me just rehash here these seven lights. You got three branches on the left, three branches on the right. That's six. And then you got one light on the center stalk, the center stem. And, of course, there's seven almond buds and blossoms on each lampstand. The almond was the first tree in the Near East to blossom in the spring, as the NIV Study Bible says. The NIV Study Bible further says that the whole design is patterned after an almond tree. Well, why is that? Life, the first tree to blossom in the spring. Life. The light is the life of Israel, the light of God, the seven branches. The perfect light of God is the life of Israel. Exodus 25, verses 34 through 36. And in the lampstand, four cups shaped like almond blossoms, its bulbs and its flowers. Now, this is confusing. The four cups, let me read the rest of it. Verse 35, a bulb should be under the first pair of branches coming out of it, and a bulb under the second pair of branches coming out of it, and a bulb under the third pair of branches coming out of it, for the six branches coming out of the lampstand. Their bulbs and their branches shall be of one piece with it, and all of it shall be one piece of hammered work of pure gold. Now, that verse is extremely confusing unless you look at a picture. First of all, you got four cups shaped like almond blossoms. Well, if you look at the center stalk of the lampstand at the very top, that's one. Now, as you go down, you got a branch coming from left and branch coming from the right, and those branches intersect that center stalk. Well, at the intersection of the center stalk, there's another almond bulb and its flowers, bulb and flowers. Well, that's the first of the left and the right branches. We got a second pair of left and right branches. And they intersect that center stalk, and at the center intersection of the center stalk, there's another almond bulb and its blossoms. And we've got a third left and right branch intersecting the center stem of the lampstand, and this is at the lowest point of the intersection. And at that intersection, there's another almond bulb and its blossoms. So there's your four, one at the top and three at the intersections of the three pairs of branches coming in from the sides. We go now to verse 37, Exodus 25. Then you shall make its lamps seven in number. Now that's the lamps at the top of the seven branches. The three branches on the left, the three branches on the right, and the one stalk in the one stem in the center. That's a total of seven. You shall make its lamps seven in number. And they shall mount, the workers, shall mount its lamps so as to shed light on the space in front of it. Seven, as I said, is divine perfection. The NIV Study Bible says it's completeness, but it's divine perfection. Now, these lamps burned at night. There's a question as to, did they burn during the daytime also? The NIV says they only burned at night. Jameson Fawcett Brown says they burnt all the time, 24/7, except, of course, when they were being changed out. I suspect they burned all the time. I can't, because it's dark in there. And this doesn't do the symbolism so good to say that they were left unburning during the daytime, because what does the daytime mean in the middle of a dark room? Here's some other scriptures referring to these lamps. Exodus 37, Aaron shall burn fragrant incense on it on the golden altar. He shall burn it every morning when he trims the lamp. So you see the lamps are trimmed every morning. Now, it doesn't say whether he relit the lamps after he trimmed them every morning. If he relit them, then you got the lamps burning 24/7. And I think that's what he probably did. It doesn't say, it's a speculation, he could have just trimmed the lamps and not relit them, in which case it would only be at night that the lamps were burned. Leviticus 24:2 says this, command the sons of Israel that they bring to you clear oil from beaten olives for the light to make a lamp burn continually. Now, of course, that sounds like the lamp's burning 24/7, but that word could mean continually at intervals. In other words, every day continually, but not, excuse me, every night continually, every night, but not during the daytime. So that's still ambiguous. The NIV Study Bible describes the lamp. I've already described it to you. I'll mention it again. Here's the quote. The ancient lamp was a small clay saucer with part of its rim pinched together to form a spout from which protruded the top, a wick fed by oil contained in the saucer. The NIV Study Bible continues and says that light from the lamps represented the glory of the Lord, the light of the Lord. Yeah, I think that's pretty good symbolism. Practically, the light enabled the priest to change the showbread because it's dark in there. There are no windows. And if they're going to change the showbread, they've got to see what they're doing. Now, here's an interesting question. How can the priest snuff the lights to trim the wicks if it's dark in there? Well, this is my answer. The priest would trim one wick at a time. So he's snuffed one light. He's got six lights remaining. That's plenty of light to see, help him see his work as he trims the wick, puts the wick in the pan, relights the wick. He can do all that with the other six lights that are burning, and then he just does that one light at a time as he goes through. I think that's your answer there. Exodus 25, verses 38 through 40. Its, that means the lampstands, snuffers and their trays shall be of pure gold. It shall be made from a talent of pure gold with all these utensils. By the way, the Ark of the Covenant and the poles carrying these, the poles of the Ark and the poles of the table were made of acacia wood covered with gold. But the mercy seat was pure gold. The table of the bread of the presence was acacia wood covered with gold, and the lampstand was pure gold. And the utensils that go along with this lampstand, its snuffers and its trays, shall be of pure gold. It, the lampstand, shall be made from a talent of pure gold with all these utensils. See that you make them after the pattern for them, which was shown to you on the mountain. Now again, where were these trays kept? I assume they were kept on the outside and the implements brought in when were needed. These snuffers, the lampstand's snuffers, shall be made of pure gold. And of course, the snuffers are to put out the candle and then also to trim the wick. This is according to ISBE, International Standard Bible Encyclopedia. And not only to put out the light, but also to trim the wick. I can't question that. These snuffers are mentioned two other times in Scripture. Exodus 37:23, he also made its seven lamps, snuffers and fire pans of pure gold. Numbers 4:9, they're to take a blue cloth and cover the lampstand used for light with its lamps, snuffers and fire pans, as well as its jars of oil by which they service it. So they got the lamps themselves, which came off the stems. They had snuffers, which is to snuff the light, the candlelight out, and to trim the wicks. They had fire pans, which is be speculates were used to put the burnt wicks on. And then you got jars of oil, because you have to carry oil into the holy place in order to pour oil into the lamp. Now, I haven't mentioned where the oil is, because I don't know how the oil entered into the lamp, but somehow, here's how it is. Yes, I do know. You got seven lamps, they're clay saucers with the wicks and the saucers going into the pinched rim spout. Well, that's where you put the oil, in the clay saucers at the top of the seven branches. The lamp, which is at the top of the seven branches, the lamp which is nestled in that almond blossom with its flowers. Well, somebody has to carry that oil into the holy place in order to pour oil into those lamps. And so the jars of oil are mentioned as part of the utensils that go along with the lampstand. You see, the detail is pretty complex here. The priests are told exactly what they're supposed to do. Now, verse 40 says, God says, Moses, see that you make them after the pattern that I have, all the table, the lampstand, and the utensils. Why? Because it's extremely important to conform to the pattern, because the tabernacle and its furniture are a type of the New Testament church. This was repeated in Hebrews 8:5. They serve a copy and shadow of the heavenly things, just as Moses was warned by God when he was about to erect the tabernacle. For see, he says, that you make all things according to the pattern which was shown you on the mountain. That is a direct quote of our verse here, Exodus 25:40. Also in Exodus 26:30, we see a repetition of this. Then you shall erect the tabernacle according to its plan, which you have been shown in the mountain, according to its plan or its pattern. Ladies and gentlemen, I am now finished with Exodus chapter 25, verses 23 through 40. We finished the chapter now, and that prepares us for our next chapter, in which we will look at the construction of the tabernacle itself. The chapter is long, tedious, and complicated, so I'm going to only do the first 14 verses, which I will call the tabernacle, curtains, and coverings. Hope to see you for the next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.